The still itself looks like his. He looks like, you know, those little blow up things in front of those buildings where they trying to sell like a whole bunch of mattresses or something. And they be like, what? That's what he looked like in the picture when he getting dunked on.
The inflatable stick man.
They always be going every which way.
You are now listening to the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. Here are your hosts, Deontay Epps and Dane Beasley.
Hello and welcome to episode 52 of the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. My name is Deontay Epps, joined by my best friend, my ace, my dog, my guy, Dane Beasley. Dane, how are you doing this afternoon, evening, my guy?
Doing pretty good, man. Doing pretty good. Just got my first day back at work in like 2 weeks because of our little break that we had. So This feels like a normal day because we're one, recording, and two, just got off of work. Well, not got off of work, but 2 hours ago off of work. It feels good, man. How about you? How are things in the Epps land?
We are good, man. We finally built our pergola, canopy.
A little gazebo,
yeah,
right?
We did. Yeah, basically a gazebo. But basically, man, it was we did it at night.
Okay.
Had all our lights out there so we wouldn't have to deal with the sun and stuff like that. So took about 2 hours, but not too bad. Mission accomplished. Although it did rain a lot today, so now like the canopy part is like it was full of rain. So yeah, it's like had to shake the rain out of it. But other than that, things are good, man. But happy to be back recording episode 52. Want to say thank you to Jay Billis once again for hopping on with this last episode. Huge, talk all things NIL, man. We've got good feedback from that. Appreciate Jay again for coming on with us. And want you to know you can review, rate our podcast on Apple, 5 stars as always. And as Bomani Jones said, if you don't give us 5 stars, I am inclined to believe you are a hater. I love when he says that.
He had me scared. Because he was gone for a whole minute.
He's on vacation, right?
Yeah, he was on vacation.
Yeah.
And I was like, when I listened to the podcast from Wednesday, I was like, please tell me I didn't miss anything. Please listen. And he was like, all right, man, welcome back. I mean, glad to be back. Took a little hiatus. I was like, oh, thank you. I thought something was wrong with my podcast app. I was like, man, what did I do? Like, you know, but it was cool.
I got to catch up on his.
It's good. The Wednesday one is good. I haven't listened to Friday yet, but Wednesday's good.
Yeah. Big shout out to Blue Wire Hustle as well. We are a Blue Wire Hustle podcast. And man, episode 52, Dane, feels good to be back recording. Yeah. And first things first, man, NBA Finals. I know we talked about it on episode 50, how with, you know, without a LeBron, a big star, like the usual teams that we always see in there.
Reoccurring suspects.
Right, right. I was very happy, you know, that, you know, there's new blood in there. We have... Yeah. Chris Paul and the Suns, of course. Chris Paul's first trip to the NBA Finals, first two games, he went crazy. Suns won both of them. But Giannis last night, and Giannis has been playing
He's been playing well. He's been playing well pretty much. I mean, obviously he could be playing better, but that just speaks to the development of his game. But he hasn't had a bad – damn, I shouldn't say that.
I don't – but no, this is what I was going to say. I was going
to
say
– I know the perfect way to offset this.
When we saw his injury, we thought it was a wrap.
I was like, yeah, right? this over with.
Everybody thought it was a wrap. And then for him to, what looked like a season-ending injury, come back and put up those kind of numbers, the first two games he lost, but the last game he put up 41 points. He's put up 40 in the last two. And, of course, willing his team to win, of course, with help from, you know, his other teammates, man.
Finally.
Giannis does not – I mean, there's a small group – of people that, I mean, I won't say small, but there's a group of people that like really like Giannis. I know you're a Giannis fan. I don't hate Giannis, you know, but there's a group that don't really care for his game. You know, the way he like does the HB dive, people say almost every drive, but man, putting up 41 points when you're, I won't say he's on one leg, but when it looked like his season might be over and extended a part of that's crazy.
Listen, here's the thing. We are going to start seeing more and more and more and more guys with his build, with his God-given build, playing in his style. Of course, the hope is that he continues to develop and he advances the repertoire of offensive offensive feats that he can do, because what we're seeing right now is the same repetitive thing. He gets a little dribble on, tries a little shake and bake, and goes to the paint, score within 10 feet of the bucket. But that's been a turnoff for a lot of people, but no one has seemed to stop it yet. So my thing is,
if it ain't broke,
stop? Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, I mean, so what? Like, we've given other athletes the opportunity, or other basketball players the opportunity to progress and sharpen their game and add additional tools to their weaponry. And I think it's high time that we do the same thing for this guy. I mean, of course, it's not the most fantastic thing watching in the finals right now, but 40 points in back-to-back games is impressive. I don't care what position you play. So,
right. We'll see. And like the willingness, the will to win. Like, I mean, obviously all players are going to have that mentality in the NBA finals game, but I feel like with Giannis, like, you just got to respect it, whether you like the way he plays or not, but just, I just keep going back to that knee injury where I'm like, man, it's a wrap, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, to see him bounce back has been incredible. Now, I still have the Suns winning this in 7 games, but I would not be mad. I would love
for Chris Paul to get a ring.
Yeah, yeah. And I wouldn't be mad if the Bucks won it. Like, I think it goes back to what we were saying. Like, I mean, the Bucks won one with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Oscar Robertson, but it's been years, obviously, and the Suns have never won one. So either way, it goes on that end. I feel like it's a win for the NBA for sure. Having, and I think we talked about this too, having a new team support their crown.
We're going to get, regardless of how you feel about either one of these teams, we're going to get 2 amazing games. Those, the other 3 games, call them what you want, but these next 2 games, we're going to see some amazing stuff. So I'm looking forward to it. What I've been loving the most is this Devin Booker, This Devin Booker slander. I love it.
Look, I think I know why.
What?
Why? I feel like because every time he touches the ball, announcers are saying something about his comparison to Kobe.
Yeah, which I listen. Until we see this man with 5 seconds on the shot clock and 3 other of his teammates open, see him drive into the paint, pivot off 1 foot and fade away with 8 defenders in his face.
Yeah.
Let's kill all of it. Let him be the next Devin Booker. Let's stop comparing other players for the sake of doing it, because it's a tired and silly argument.
The first 2 games he put up, like he scored like 20. He was, but like he was taking a lot of shots, but it was like his percentage wasn't as good. And then last game he dropped like maybe 10 points, I think.
Yeah.
It was like, so maybe it'll calm down some of that notion.
A lot of people were pissed off about it, or not pissed off, but just like very critical of his games. Like when he's not, you know, when the ball isn't dropping through the bottom of the net for him, what does he bring to the table offensively? And you'd be hard pressed to say, outside of, you know, seeing the court, making sure. Yeah, I'm going to leave it at that. Aside from seeing the court and making sure he's opening up the floor for his teammates, I mean, there's not really much you can get from him on the offensive side of the ball if the shot isn't falling. But it's been it's been a circus.
He's a pretty decent defender.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, obviously his offensive game is what.
And that's
what he's known for.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's going to drive people to continue to not only love him, but just embrace him as a player, especially if you're somehow one of the 8 Phoenix Suns fans in the world. So,
yeah, I do know a few, but
I don't know.
Game 4 is on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, and I feel like I was talking to my brother about this yesterday. I feel like this series is going to be the winner of this series is going to be the one to take one on the road. Because obviously both teams are very strong at home, like completely different teams at home than they are on the road. I feel like Milwaukee even more so, like they obviously look at like, they've been down 2-0 before in the playoffs. And so playing at home, Middleton plays extremely better. Jrue Holiday as well. Giannis is going to be Giannis regardless. But I think they take game 4 because – I think they're going to build off the momentum from game 3, playing in Milwaukee, all the hype going around. And I feel like Giannis and those guys will take game 4 and even it up. I think whoever is the first team to take one, well, obviously, if it goes 7, the Suns can win all of them at home because you know, they have the most home games. But I really think, I really think if Milwaukee or whoever steals one at home, it's a wrap. What do you think?
I want to see what Vegas has to say. Have they posted?
They posted the line.
Yeah,
I'm sure they have. I haven't looked it up though.
Okay, I'm trying to stay away from it until like basically essentially the day before, maybe even a few hours before the game, just so I can not hype myself up for what could possibly happen. Versus, I want to see what the professionals see how the NBA is gonna. I mean, see how the gambling world is gonna fix this game and how they're trying to dress this up.
Before we do every podcast, you know, we prepare our notes and put little notes in there about what we're going to talk about. And you made me laugh so hard. You put in the picture of Cam Johnson get dunked on or dunking on PJ Tucker.
Yeah, PJ.
Bro, first reaction. That was insane. He tried to take the charge, but nobody.
Just the still itself looked like he looks like, you know, those little blow up things in front of those buildings where they're trying to sell like a whole bunch of mattresses or something. And they'd be like, what? That's what he looked like in the picture when he getting dunked on.
Every which way.
That's what he looks like, unfortunately. But I don't know what was going through this man's mind. But he will forever, regardless of how this series ends, he will forever be remembered in that fashion, unfortunately. Just at home too, bro. Like
it's one of those things. I feel like if PJ Tucker would have got there Shea earlier, it might have been a charge, but it's never good getting put on a poster.
No, heck no. Because 15 years from now, nobody's 15 years from now, it'd be hard to say how the outcome of that possession would have went. Some people might have remembered it as, of course, he got the charge. Some people might have remembered it as, oh, he missed the dunk. But as of right now, in this present, on the 12th of July, we're going to remember that as him getting absolutely demolished on live TV.
Most definitely. Most definitely. Most definitely. Game 4 on Wednesday, Phoenix up 2-1, game 4 in Milwaukee. So we'll come back next episode and keep you updated on that. Staying in the world of basketball, Dane, we are less than 2 weeks away from the Olympics. And, you know, in the basketball world internationally, for the most part, NBA or USA has dominated. But there was an exhibition match that happened between Team USA and Nigeria, and those guys from Nigeria were not playing, man. They beat Team USA 90-87. The Team USA squad did not look ready. They did not look inspired. And
sluggish,
I put
if you
will. In our notes, Precious Achiuwa, he swatted Kevin Durant at the basket, and he literally posted on his Instagram the picture of him swatting KD, and he said, "You're not that guy, pal. Trust me.
You're not that guy. You're not that guy."
Saying that to a two-time champion, KD, one of the best scorers in the league. Dang. Exhibition match, I'm like,
people can say what they want about, oh, they're not taking it serious enough, but there's a sense of pride when you put on that USA team jersey. And it's just like, I don't know. Maybe they thought they could coast on this one, but clearly everybody knows who's the big bad bully on the block, and the Americans just got knocked off. I mean, call it what you want. We know it's an exhibition game, it means little to nothing, but at the same time.
Hey, man.
That's just me.
I was watching it like on my phone as we were putting up the pergola, and I'm like, man, these boys are letting Nigeria hang around. And it wasn't really a hang around. I'll go into that, because Nigeria hit 23s, like 23s. Yeah. And then today,
be France,
they knocked off Argentina.
Nigeria beat
Argentina. So, I mean, these guys ain't going anywhere. And I feel like USA is going to have to see them again at some point. But as you said, it is exhibition. But, I mean, there is added pressure when you put on that Team USA uniform and you got a basketball in your hand.
We talked about it a few podcasts ago that the Olympic lineup, it wasn't like – it didn't give you that, like, that oomph. When you looked at the names, it was like, there wasn't the – I don't know. We have a collection of players that we're all aware of. We know about Dame. We know about your KDs, but there we didn't have we didn't have that bona fide generation. Well, not bona fide generation guy. We didn't have that bona fide guy that we can know, okay, we're going to be fine. We're going to be okay. Especially given, you know, what happened with the Nets, you know, how they got kicked out of the playoffs. Granted, of course, KD couldn't do it by himself, but at the same time, he's the quote unquote next guy up. And of course, he's going to face harsh criticism just as much as any other team, especially when you think about when you talk about Olympic basketball and what's at stake and the reputation that the Americans have. I don't want to go there, especially with it being just an exhibition game, but it doesn't settle my fears that it kind of reminds me of the 2004 season. With Spain and Lithuania.
The good news, if you could take anything good out of this situation, one, it's an exhibition game. Doesn't count. It two, you got time to get it together. But it's definitely an embarrassment. But at the same time, if I see like Nigeria, they won again today against Argentina, and Argentina is not a pushover. They're always in it towards the end too. So you can give Nigeria credit for sure. But at the same time, that's Team USA, man. Like you said, reputation. You got the best players in the world on the squad. There's no excuse to lose that game.
Yeah,
but they'll bounce back. I think they play Australia. We'll keep a touch on how they do after that. Dane, you sent me this next story, and literally as you sent me this one, I had just read it, like the entire article cover to cover, the world of college football, where we were talking about NIL last week. We were talking about something that happened
two years ago.
That is so insane. Yeah. 2019.
And it feels like because 2020 was one of the longest years of all time, it just feels like it's much longer. 2019 was much longer ago than what it is. I know it's just 2 years ago, but still, it just feels like a very long time ago. Long story short, we have a coach, a coach by the name of Les Miles. Some of you might know about him, of the Jayhawks. And apparently, allegedly, there were a number of football players on the team that were, reads notes, street manufacturing, selling narcotics. They were selling some sort of drug. One of the teammates caught wind of it, and whether or not he approached the team members or approached the quote unquote drug dealers is a little foggy, a little murky, but some words were exchanged, and from there was beef. The football players would then, there are a number of times where they had altercations with this particular player, whether it's in practice, before practice or after practice, or even in the dude's bedroom where they showed up basically, you know, it's like a scene out of The Wire or something. They showed up at the man's house to intimidate him. It was like, and his girl, I mean, ex-girlfriend, of course, his ex-girlfriend was there too. I'm like, man, like, but essentially, Les Miles swept some stuff, or not. I can't even say pin this all on Les Miles, because if the allegations are true, then the entire athletics department,
top to bottom,
all the way from whoever the team, because every team has one, a team handler, the team handler that didn't take care of it, the coaching staff, whoever's in charge of disciplinary actions and things like that, keeping the players in check from that standpoint. The athletic directors, even you might even say some of the members of the campus cabinet might have some dirt on them for this. But essentially, the young man was paid off to stay away and, of course, leave the campus and to go on about his life
and not
say anything about it. But somehow we got a story about it, a really long story. It took about 10, 15 minutes to read. So it's. If you haven't already, take a look at that. You know, I'm sure we'll have a link somewhere, but take a look at that article or read it for yourself. Yeah. It's pretty in-depth. Of course, it's only one side because a number of the players declined to, give their side or speak with the reporting team that, you know, wrote this piece. But, I mean, there has to be some sort of truth to it. Not sure how much, but it's something straight out of a movie. It's straight out of a movie.
That's a fact. And the player that was supposedly paid off, his name was Caperton Humphrey from West Virginia, transferred to Kansas a year after playing at Eastern Kentucky, I believe. But basically everything Dane said is what was said in the article as far as him transferring there. He started a few games his first year there, got into it with some teammates, about, you know, you saw them supposedly selling drugs. And ever since that altercation that they had in practice, it's been a long thing where he is essentially getting bullied.
Yeah.
From what the article is saying, he's getting bullied by four players on the defensive side of the ball who, according to the article, played a lot of time under Les Miles. So it's just unfortunate, man, especially with everything in Title IX and everything that's going on with cases all over the country being swept under the rug. You know, every now and then we'll get a report about something that happened a few years ago where a coach or an administrator has turned a blind eye. And it's like, man, you would think people would have, I mean,
some integrity,
some compassion for these types of situations. So like for this one, for example, instead of Les Miles and the administration giving discipline to these four or however many players, they didn't. They decided to, okay, we got to keep this on the hush hush. Let's pay this guy, do whatever it takes for him to not say anything about it. And for a program like Kansas, where, I mean, in football, you're already like the bottom of the bottom in the Big 12. Basketball, you are currently battling allegations in the basketball program. And the basketball program is one of the top programs in the country. And this is just not good. And it seems like because some of the players, or excuse me, some of the administration that's mentioned in this article is still a part of the staff, and they've already hired or a part of the process hiring a new athletic director, a new coach. So I'm sure that obviously I don't think this is going to be the end, and we'll see more about this story in the future because people that are mentioned in this article are still part of the organization or the athletic department. So it's unfortunate. And believe it or not, I don't think we'll see the last of these kinds of stories, unfortunately, with stuff coming out. It's just a sad situation.
Yeah, but there has to be some truth to it because, of course, in a situation like this, no pun intended, where there is smoke, there usually is fire. Back to you, Deontay.
Yep. And with that note,
what's that sound?
Nerdy news segment brought to you by nobody except Keith for that beautiful music that he provides with us or for us.
Keith one time.
Black Widow. It has been 2 years since Marvel movies, Dane. A little over a year.
Two
Spider-Man, right? When did Spider-Man come out?
Far From Home. Wait, hold on. I'm drawing a blank here. I sure remember because I went to this.
It came out the same year as Endgame. Endgame came out in 2019. There were no movies in 2020.
Just like 2 weeks.
Maybe like a month.
Okay.
Anyway, Black Widow came out July 9th. Marvel Studios returned to the big screen. Directed by Kate Shortland, Scarlett Johansson, Florence Pugh, Rachel Weisz, David Harbour. Movie takes place between the events of Civil War and Infinity War. I wanted to say I did enjoy this movie, Dane. Mm-hmm. There were parts of the movie, and I talked about this with Karina, where...
Oh.
Spoiler alert. Thank you. Spoiler alert. There were parts of the movie where I didn't understand why or how certain things happen, and I'll get to that in a second. But overall, man, I enjoyed the action. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed some of the gaps filled in from previous movies, like the Avengers, where Loki is talking to Black Widow about her red ledger.
Murky past.
Dracov's daughter. And we're like, okay, what happened? It filled in those gaps.
Yeah.
Of course, the post-credit scene where we see her sister, Yelena Belova, meets up with a chick from Seinfeld. I can't even remember her real name. But basically going off of her appearance in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, where it looks like it's setting up some sort of team. Could be the Thunderbolts, could be Dark Avengers. We don't know yet. But overall, I would say this movie... as much as we've seen with the Loki show and what we've seen with WandaVision, of course, those are more power magic kind of beings. It was good to see a grounded type of MCU movie similar to what we saw with Winter Soldier back in the day, the Captain America movies. But I will say it was a it was a good send off for Scarlett Johansson if she doesn't return as Black Widow, which doesn't seem like she will, man. But overall, I enjoyed it. I will talk about the gripes in a second, but what'd you think of it?
I like the movie. Me and the wife, we enjoyed it thoroughly. No, we're disappointed because it shouldn't have. She should have gotten this. I mean, I understand the way that Marvel does things, the sequence, but it's been a gripe for me ever since they announced it. She should have been got this movie. And whether or not they were concerned about whether it was going to perform or not, that's irrelevant. You got to take chances on the people that you invest in, and you invested in her, particularly in so many roles in the MCU. With that being said, I'm glad they gave her her roses. She had a big hand, not only with, like you said, as an actor in the movie, but she's behind the scenes. She's credited as one of the, if I'm not mistaken, like executive producer or something like that. She had a big role, a big hand in what took place or what was happening in the movie, which is hella respect to her, because that's long money. She's going to get more money from that than she will, you know, being casted in the particular role and playing in the movie itself. But it's just kind of dope. And it speaks to her range as not only as a creator, but also as a human being in this particular MCU. But if I could be real, I like the movie for two things. One, we finally got some more clarity upon Budapest, and and Clint have mentioned Budapest a number of times. And it's like, why do they keep bringing this up without like almost like they're teasing us, but it was kind of just a good callback. And it's one thing we got to credit, or I credit Marvel a lot for the way that they provide these callbacks and the way that they misdirect with their trailers and movies and such. But to me, that was one of the most impressive things, just finally having that particular part of the story pay off. Second is just, we can see their continuity. We're transitioning from one Black Widow to her successor. Of course, it might take us a while to get there, but we can already see that it has already been put in place. Of course, with the other widows, spoiler alert, of course, again, with the other widows being released from their control and captivity, there's endless possibilities on who could take the realm. And but I think signs are all pointing to her sister. So we'll see. Now back to these gripes. Oh, my bad. Go ahead, man.
Before I get to the gripes, one thing I did enjoy, and I watched Endgame today before we started recording. Oh. And it kind of brought everything back into like a full closure moment. Her sacrifice, the way she was acting in Endgame, you could kind of like assume like what we saw in Black Widow is her like, all right, I've done this. I've, you know, I already know I have these families that I didn't think I had. And I've had my purpose here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I can sacrifice my life for the greater good kind of thing. And I felt like rewatching Endgame, like if you get a chance, just rewatch, even if it's not the whole thing, just rewatch her scenes, and it kind of like brings it some closure in a sense.
Especially from the guilt that she's been harboring for a long time. Especially they showed it in Black Widow when she assumed that she, of course, she's admitted she's done a lot of, you know, a lot of dirty things, a lot of grimy things in her past. But the one thing that seems like it's been harder to the most is possibly killing a little girl. Turns out she didn't actually kill her. And although she was freed from that, she still has the guilt and suffer the consequences of her actions based on the way that person had to live their life under a severe state of mind control. So it was cool seeing her come to terms with that. But I think in Endgame, she definitely was at peace with her life because of everything, the events that transpired from the movie that we just got. Correct. 2 years after she died.
Correct.
Crazy. It's crazy. And so these gripes.
To the gripes. You mentioned one of them, just the placement of the film, and it's not the film's fault, obviously. No. I feel like, obviously, the film would have served a better purpose if it was either in the spot Captain Marvel was in, which was in between Infinity War and Endgame, or directly after Civil War chronologically in the story. I feel like it gave it more of a, I guess, impact, so to speak, which is not the film's fault.
No,
it's not a critique of the film. It's just a placement of the film. It would, I feel like it would have made it more, gave it more of a impact in the overall MCU.
There's one of the critiques. One of the critiques of Marvel, of the MCU. If you want to talk about anything Marvel does bad, is it might just be the timing of their releases. That might be it. That just wasn't thought out properly.
The next gripe, it was parts of the film, bro. I know the MCU is the MCU. You're going to see crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. As much as her jump from the sky was from the towards the end, she landed on her feet, bro. She landed on her feet. It was just different parts. It's like, you know what's going to happen because it's MCU. You know she's not going to die. You know she's going to do superhero stuff. That just kind of, I could get over that. The part that kind of made me feel like, okay, what happened there? It's towards the end. Mm-hmm. The family's all together. They're like, oh, we're family. You know, they're Scarlet is, Black Widow is standing there. And literally the trucks, the Ross and them are coming to get her. Mm-hmm. And she's just standing there looking at them come. And then it just cuts and goes from her talking to Mason with the blonde hair. And I'm like, how does she get out of that situation? Like Ross was literally right there.
Might have been
and
then a deleted it just scene. Like flipped. Some cut from the film, possibly.
I don't know, man. That part just, it wasn't like terrible, but it's just like, I wanted to see like, okay, did she get away? Well, obviously she did, but like how? Like they were literally right there. And it just cuts to her with Mason getting the Quinjet and flying off. But I mean, it was just different parts of the film were just like didn't make sense to me. And then I don't know how I feel about Taskmaster. There were a few scenes, the fight scenes with Taskmaster were dope.
They were dope.
But I don't know if I like who Taskmaster was.
Too predictable?
Actually, I didn't predict that.
I did.
But
I was like, man, that girl
you felt
dead.
Like it was her?
Yeah, because if he survived, then surely enough the little girl could, he probably will the girl to survive. I didn't know that it was going to be a mind control thing. That was the furthest thing from my mind, but I just knew that the girl was going to be like, I was like, man. And plus, the one thing that gave away for me, and this isn't like, it was her the size of her arms. Her arms were skinny, like super skinny. When she
I didn't
was,
pay attention.
When she I forgot what scene it was, but she walked by the camera. I was like, man, is that Kevin Durant in there in that costume or something? Because her arms were just toothpick like. And I was like, all right, that might be either just a super, super, super tiny guy, or is it, you know, it might be a woman. But my suspicions were they kept referencing to the little girl and the mistakes that she made. Okay, yeah, that's definitely her then. The guilt.
Yeah.
There's no way for her to keep talking about the guilt and for her to just keep going like this and then eventually drop off. It had to be some sort of payoff with them mentioning the guilt and her redeeming herself. And sure enough.
Yeah. I thought Mason was going to be Taskmaster. But throughout the film, I'm like, there's no way. Like, how is he here and Taskmaster's there? Like, I just felt like I think because his character was just like very scarce in the film. Like you only saw him in a few things or a few scenes. And so I thought, have you ever seen that actor before? His name is O.T. Fagbenle, but he plays in Handmaid's Tale, which Karina loves. But
okay, no, I haven't seen that.
I just felt like he'd have a bigger part because he's like
he's gonna have a bigger part. Is what they're saying. Yeah. They're teasing at least.
Yeah. So right, and so it just goes back to one of those things where MCU like will lay something there and be like, all right, that's gonna be there. We're sowing the seeds now, but later it's gonna pay off. Like I feel like Taskmaster is gonna come back, but I don't know what capacity.
We'll see. I mean,
I think it's a villain that can come down the line.
So what I've seen, the criticism that I've been reading online about the Taskmaster is just the way that the origin story, the backstory, it wasn't fulfilling enough to a lot of people. And I was like, dude, this is the MCU. Like we've seen plenty of times the villains come back and reprise the roles. Like there might be another variation of the Taskmaster. We've seen how the Flag Smashers, they arose because they were inspired by criminals and inspired by other anti-heroes. They were inspired by other anti-heroes amongst the world. So there could very well be another person that's been just so breathtaking and so, what's the best way I can think of? So captivated by the Taskmaster that they, you know, end up trying to be a copycat. So There's also a possibility of that, but I'm not going to, we can't write off the particular portrayal or the particular origin story of this person until we see the very last of it. And there's no telling when that would be, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
And with them diving, and we'll segue into the next part, them diving into multiverse with the Loki show. Like, it could be another whole Taskmaster in another timeline. You know, MCU has, like, they with the Loki, and we'll start talking about Loki now. For them to expand and go into the multiverse world, it's like a thing where the possibilities are endless. Like, mm-hmm. you can take this character from this timeline, put him here. Like, it, they like have a bunch of toys on the floor right now, and they're like, okay, I'm done playing with this one, but I can go get this toy here and place it there. With Loki coming up, the finale coming up on Wednesday, Dane, what are you expecting as far as a finale, like leading into what could be the next few projects for the Marvel?
Misdirection. Okay. We've been hoodwinked and bamboozled in the past about without the big bad and WandaVision was going to be. We all thought it was, you know, not all, but a lot of us thought it was Mephisto. And it turned out to not be that. And here's the thing. This is a, what, six episode? Was it a six episode project? Mm-hmm. Six episode project. I don't think we're going to get a big reveal like that. You know, somebody that's, of course, all suspicions and speculation is pointing towards Kang the Conqueror. But if he's supposed to be the next big bad, similar to how Thanos was, and there was 10 years worth of buildup for Thanos, we've got 10 seconds here, 15 seconds here, 5 seconds here, and then boom, he got most of the film, or he got most of the screen time in one of the movies. I don't know if they're going to, I don't think it would be a disservice to introduce a character of that magnitude that has so many different tie-ins and so many different storylines associated with him to shoehorn him in a season finale of a six-part series. That's not to say that it won't happen, but in my opinion, I just assume it's too good to be true. The misdirection, the obvious misdirection with his wife being in the show, is just too good to be true. I think it'll be all
the signs are pointing to Kang.
It's going to be messed around to be a variant. It's going to be a variant. You think it's Kang,
but we got this guy.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but supposedly, you mentioned how the buildup for Thanos took 10 years. Mm-hmm. So these next few iterations of these villains aren't supposed to take that long. Of course, I thought I read a report from Feige, but I kind of agree with what you're saying about a villain as big as Kang the Conqueror being introduced so quickly. We know he is coming in Ant-Man 3.
Oh yeah.
But to put him in here, and plus all the signs pointing to him coming, like Renslayer, all that. Yeah.
The thing about it is we have movies and we have shows that have pointed at the multiverse being a realistic thing. We have a mention of it in Endgame from the Ancient One showing us the particular timeline and the different branches. We see that same sort of concept appear in Loki with the TVA. We see, of course, the obvious leaks for the next Spider-Man movie and the multiverse coming up with that. Obviously, the Doctor Strange 2. We know that there's going to be a multiverse, you know, mentioned there. And then, of course, obviously, in Ant-Man, we know that the quantum realm is going to be a big part of that, tying into together the plot for that movie. So I think the buildup for the multiverse has been very evident, and the way that we're going to see it in these different movies is going to be pretty impressive. But to just assume that it's going to be Kang this early, I think is just getting a little too ahead of myself and too excited, overexcited. So I'm going to tamper my expectations.
Just tamper.
Yeah, I'm just going to assume that it's going to be some variant of Loki. Maybe. What if we got an Endgame Loki? The Loki that died is actually not dead. What if that's just him, or maybe some other cast off form of a Mortis or something like that? I don't know.
I'm not putting nothing like down, like any possibility at this point. But overall, man, the show, I think we talked about this a few episodes ago, out of the three Marvel or Disney Plus shows from Marvel Studios that has came out so far, Loki is by far my favorite.
Yeah.
Told you, bro. Everything we've seen.
Tom Hiddleston's the GOAT, bro.
No, I agree. I was out of all three shows, I was least excited for this one. So
shame
for it to, I know, but I'm like, Loki though, like before, like Tom Hiddleston aside, the character of Loki, we saw that he died already. So I'm like, what more
How
can
many
they
other times have we seen this man die?
Well, I agree, but my gripe was like, what more can we see from this character? And obviously I've been blown away by what they have brought, you know, to the table with this project. I'm definitely excited for the finale, tempering my expectations for sure. But you had mentioned the multiverse, Dane, and what if, which is going to be coming out in August from Marvel Studios. Right. Okay. And so if you have not seen the What If trailer, it is an animation project from Marvel Studios that is coming out in August. It'll be the next show, obviously, out for Marvel Studios. But I'm thinking, man, is it going to connect with, it has to connect with the MCU that we know now, even though it's animation.
It's canon, bro. All of it's canon.
Yeah.
It's, put it this way, it's the cheapest, I'm not going to say cheapest, it's the most convenient way that they can flesh out stories in such a way that it requires or doesn't require big budgets. What I mean by that is, if all the what if was live action, we wouldn't get that this soon. That would require a lot of money, for one, because Tony Stark is one of the primary, which of course they recast the voice is not that of Robert Downey Jr. Obviously,
correct.
It'd be way too expensive. If my thought process pans out, is way too expensive. One, you have to think about that. Two, you have to think about getting all those characters in one place again, which you can conveniently do with voiceover acting. It's very, 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 very convenient. Three, we get endless possibilities, and we get to see another creative side of Marvel and of course DC. And then of course we have tons and tons and tons of content with those backstories, with alternate adventures and alternate set. Oh, go ahead.
I'm gonna ask you this.
You said it's
canon. You think it's canon?
I think it's canon.
So could you see a possibility, however What If ends, I don't know if the stories are going to be connected or they're going to be independent, but say, for instance, the What If stories are connected.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happens at What If, at the end of What If,
leads
could
into
you
Black.
See like, mm-hmm. like, for example, say What If Killmonger is at the end and he becomes Black Panther, I'm hypothetically speaking. Yeah. Could you see that same character from Killmonger, the animation, become live action in Black Panther 2. Like,
they'd have to explain it, how that happened, whether it's something
right,
that's
in the multiverse.
Something that irreversible or something that messed up the way it's not supposed to be. I don't know how they would explain. I don't know how they would explain it, because I'm assuming it'd be two different. Yeah, I don't know how they would explain it, because eventually you'd have to come back and acknowledge the fact that, of course, T'Challa is no longer.
I just used that one as an example.
I got you. I'm just trying to poke holes to it. My bad.
For example, like another one, like, you know how we see Tony Stark.
Yeah.
The animation of Tony Stark, like he survives through What If, doesn't get killed in the animation, blah blah blah. Can we see a Tony Stark come out and be in live action in the MCU? Like, I think whatever, I think it's canon, but like you said, I don't know how they're going to explain that. Maybe with the Doctor Strange movie, like, it's definitely one of
the
those.
Possibilities are endless, bro.
Yeah, man.
Don't stress yourself out thinking.
Yeah, okay?
You're going to hurt yourself.
Just let it Kevin play Feige out. Is. Yeah, ain't no telling what he's going to do.
Marvel's
man.
In their bag, my boy. Like,
that's the fact.
But the bottom line for the What If trailer, it was very emotional. Obviously, we lost an icon. Most importantly, his family lost a very, very dear loved one, which we will never understand as fans, of course. But from a standpoint of what his work across so many different genres of film has done representation wise. And then, of course, just how talented he was, and just seemed like he was such a a young, very, very young, promising career that we're about to see unfold before our eyes. We get to see his last role.
His last
is,
one. Yeah.
It's going to be emotional. I can't speak for everybody else. For me, it's definitely going to be emotional. But at the same time, it's the send off that he needs. But it's the gift that gives the gift that keeps on giving. Because I had no idea. I knew that there was going to be a What If series, but I had no idea that there was, you know,
I had heard
something
rumblings.
That got done. Something that
yeah, they were I able had to get rumblings. He done. Did finish that. Yeah. So. Man, that's going to be awesome to see. And like you said, bittersweet, obviously, with the passing of Chadwick Boseman. But yeah, that series will drop August 11th. Mm-hmm. Excited for that. Of course, Loki season finale will drop this Wednesday on Disney Plus. We'll see how that goes. Going to be a lot of conspiracies and theories about what happens in the finale. But we'll obviously keep you updated and tune in on all our thoughts on the next episode. And Dane, we'll close out episode 52 with some good news, man.
The good news.
Zyla Avant-Garde.
Yeah. Spelling extraordinaire. Everybody's old enough to know every once in a while, or not every once, this annually, they have a spelling bee competition, and these are some of the brightest child minds across the world. Show up, and everybody knows what a spelling bee is. They say a word, you spell it, you get it right, you go to the next round. If you don't, you know what I'm saying, you fail. But this particular time, it's very special. It's very special. First African-American to win this competition, and it's in existence has been, what, close to 100 years, right?
Yeah, the competition itself. I think it said 96.
Okay. I know it's like super close to it. I can't remember the exact number, but I know it's in the history. And we've seen it. I mean, I've obviously seen it, the plenty of GIFs and the videos we saw of other kids winning. And it's like, man, that's dope. That's really dope. But to see this, you know, this black kid from Louisiana winning, it was just like, that was huge. And the fact that the way that she characterized this particular championship, the particular championship that she got, the way she characterized it, she said this is essentially, so many words, she said it was a side hustle. Like, this ain't even my main thing. Like, this is just something I do on the side, you know? So let me put it this way. BLT, you work a 9-to-5, right? Essentially, yeah.
I do.
You play video games, right?
Yep.
You would consider video games like a little side deal, right?
Yep.
Okay, so let's put that in perspective. If you have not done so, please do so. Google or YouTube this young lady's name. And you will see exactly what her main deal is. You will see what her. I've never seen someone so young with handling and skill like that. But ladies and gentlemen, we might have a basketball prodigy on our hands, because the way that her court vision, the way that she handles the ball. And of course, she's obviously a magician going towards the hole. Like, she's phenomenal. So
holds 3 Guinness World Records for basketball skills. Like, I'm watching her on this video, and she is on a unicycle dribbling 3 basketballs. And then there's another video, she's juggling and dribbling a basketball at the same time.
And
I think she has a world record for the longest time dribbling 5 basketballs at the same time. It's insane.
Yeah.
Zyla Avant-Garde, man. Salute to you.
Shout out to you.
At the age of 13, 14, man,
She was at the ESPYs too. I seen the clip of her with Anthony Mackie hosting.
Anthony Mackie gave her a shout out because they both from Louisiana. Yeah. But man, I don't even know what to say, bro.
Makes me not even want to pick up a basketball again. Just like, she's got the tricks down. Like, you know, here I am still looking at the ball as I'm dribbling and stuff. And she, you know, she's doing her thing. So hopefully, my hope is that we'll see her, a lot more of her, within the next 5 to 6 years, bro. Because
she'd only been studying words for 2 years, like, for the spelling bee.
Her brain is just out there, G.
That's insane.
And you see,
that's
like, insane. When she spelled the, was it?
She made the Bill Murray joke.
she's spinning around. Like,
Murray,
she's just so excited, like, to see the joy on that girl's face. And then right after she finished spelling the word, she's like kind of looking for approval. Like, she's like, what's going on? And then she got a signal from somebody, and then she was like, and then just the range of emotions, it was just cool to see. Like, a kid is a candy store, man. So
beautiful to see. Shout out to Yes, for sure.
Shout out to her and all the other Spelling Bee champs. Look, especially you, viewer. We know you won the Spelling Bee at your third grade, championship. And, you know, you didn't get no big celebration. You didn't go viral or anything like that. But guess what? We care about you. If you want a Spelling Bee, look, if you want a Spelling Bee and you want to get your props, just shoot us a DM and we'll make sure to shout you out, because you're a winner in our hearts, even if you didn't make it past the second round.
That's a fact, man. We'll close it on that one. Episode 52 of the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast. Make sure you check us out on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, the Duo Sports and Stuff podcast.com. Episode 52. We out.